Okay, well, welcome everybody. Great to hear all the Redwood Valley sort of.
Back in the corner.
Yeah, that's great. The people sort of were slowly sort of moving in here. our day, Upasika Day, is on Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, and this is of course as our Upasika program we take different topics through the year and pick out different themes to explore in terms of sutta, our study, or social application. This is on meditation and the practicing Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing. This is bread and butter. I mean, it's the this is the roots. This is the basics of our meditation and. I think what I'll do is just give some some general instruction, and then maybe give people the opportunity to ask a few questions, a bit of discussion, and then practice. Right. And then we'll have a break. I'll probably repeat that cycle, so that it'll be quite a simple format today. Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing is it's the method of practice that the Buddha himself taught most frequently in the suttas. When you see the Buddha giving meditation instruction, as often as not, he's going to be laying out mindfulness of breathing for people to practice. When the Buddha does lay out the practice in the as in the sutta. there's a structure that he uses that allows the mindfulness of breathing to tie into the four foundations of mindfulness, and and that's a really important. Okay, I think there's a couple seats, just cushions and mats, just waiting for you. So that when the Buddha does, give that meditation instruction, there's a structure that ties into the four foundations of mindfulness, so that mindfulness of breathing is then a vehicle for investigating or coordinating one's exploration with attention to the body, feelings, mind, phenomena, so that that aspect of the four foundations of mindfulness are then a structure that one can be exploring, and I think that's helpful to recognize, because sometimes when you say mindfulness of breathing, it's then somehow understood that all you're trying to do is just keep your mind on your breath. And makes it very limited, because the actual mindfulness of breathing, when it's developed, and in the Anapanasati Sutta, and the Buddha is sort of saying, yeah, when the mindfulness of breathing is cultivated and it sort of completes the four foundations of mindfulness, and the four foundations of mindfulness are complete, it fulfills the seven factors of enlightenment. So this is a complete path to liberation. It's not just somehow to get your little attention or the little tip of your nose and hang, keep it there. You want to get open your perspective up to, okay, what's actually useful, what's interesting, as I'm paying attention to the breath coming in and the breath going out. Where is an interesting place to to pay attention? Where is an interesting place to explore what is actually coming up, what's arising? So it's both a a concentration practice or a tranquility practice, a samatha practice, as well as an insight practice or a vipassana practice. There's oftentimes debate in different circles of how the mindfulness of breathing is just some kind of tranquility technique but that's really not how the Buddha taught it. It's not how it was developed over the centuries of Buddhist practice. I think that's another aspect of the ways that we pick up in the culture or in the circles that we run in, different views and opinions about practice, and then we start to worry, what's the correct method? What's the right way? And then trying to get the right technique, and then overlooking the fact that what's behind that is actually doubt, so that one should be using the mindfulness of breathing to help to create a sense of a continuity of mindfulness, continuity of awareness, and it's that continuity of mindfulness and awareness that allows the mind to settle. And the actual methodology is there's a certain degree of certain degree of appropriate attention, but the differences in methodology are more what actually works for you, what works, what's helpful, and because sometimes I know that there's I've actually experienced this where seeing these two monks sort of going at it in kind of debate and arguing of, what does Anapanasati actually mean and what is the right way to pay attention to the in-breath and out-breath. Should you be paying attention to the in-breath first and the out-breath, or the out-breath first and the in-breath after? And I said, wow, that's really, it's just dumb. it doesn't really matter. So that sense of how we can get swept up in, one, views and opinions, or two, that attachment to kind of precept and practice. That's that sila bhatta paramasa, which is that's an obstruction to liberation, and because that fear of trying to get the absolutely correct interpretation is in itself an obstruction, and that kind of worry and fear that ends up nitpicking and obsessing on a particular technique will create the obstacles that block one from actually becoming peaceful. So to recognize, okay, the in-breath, the out-breath, it's a common physical experience that we all have as human beings. We don't even have to be human beings. That's what it's like in the first precept of refraining from taking the life of any living creature. When you say living creature, the Pali, panatipata, pana is breath. It's a breathing being. Using attention to the what is most fundamental to our existence, our breath, and that's a it's helpful to recognize that this is tuning into the breath is not as a meditation object is not a you're not just paying attention to and honing in on the air coming in and out of your lungs as a physical experience. What you're paying attention to is the breath is a manifestation of a kind of a breath energy. When we breathe in, we breathe out. There's a kind of energy, a force, a texture to the sensation that we experience. There's a flow of the breath coming in, the breath coming out, how it resonates through the body, how it resonates through the mind, the rhythm that of the breath and the rhythm that it and the tone that it sets for the mind itself. This is more what you're paying attention to. We can get too hooked by the technicalities and forget the artistry of it, really. In the sense of this is this sense of paying attention to what the experience is, and the breath is kind of a mirror for our experience of the life force. It's a experience of it's a mirror for the kind of moods that we're having. You can feel when there's a sense of fear or worry, the breath will feel tight. When there's kind of anger or aversion, the breath will be kind of short. There'll be it'll be different. When there's some kind of greed or longing, and the breath is experienced in a different way. So also paying attention to ways that we can modulate the breath so that there is a sense of ease. There's a sense of well-being. There's a sense of happiness. You want to be nurturing a sense of happiness in the mind. You want to be using the breath, because even like breathing in, that sense of breathing in a feeling of well-being, like you live in a benevolent universe that it's not threatening you. It's not just unmitigated misery all around that you're breathing into yourself. You can breathe this well-being in. As you breathe out, you can be allowing that well-being to expand around. You can be generating that out further and further. So these are ways of using the breath as a means of fostering this quality of well-being and ease. And you'll experience it both physically as well as mentally, emotionally. And then you start, and you have to pay attention. Okay, what's the mind actually? You can say, that's a nice idea. And then, of course, your mind, gloms on to some kind of worry about some planning that you're doing, or some memory that sets up some kind of irritation, and the mind goes off again. But you can experience that as a kind of agitation to the smooth quality of the breath. So that, again, you're using a mirror of the breath to recognize and understand the moods, feelings, thoughts, projections of the mind. So that there's this quality of the breath is helpful to recognizing how the body and the mind actually work together, function together, I think there's a tendency in Western thinking and perception to be this kind of a separation of the kind of material, spiritual, as if they don't really communicate with each other or exist together, and a Buddhist perspective and a Buddhist practice perspective, you want to be tuning into how those qualities of mind and body can actually inhabit the same space and inform, support, encourage each other. That sense of that division of mind and body, in Western thinking, it's actually an interesting exploration. I don't know that much about it, but in terms of Western philosophy, but there is a tendency, I think, in Western thought to take things to an extreme. Because that mind and body split is actually only from around Descartes, and in a sort of Western philosophical and Christian thought. But that mind and body together ended up in certain weirdnesses, like you can't I mean, that's why you couldn't. You had to bury the dead. You couldn't cremate them because you had to have an intact body in order to when in resurrection. If you didn't have an intact body somewhere in the ground, somewhere, then, well, you're sunk. That sort of mind-body. And it's also why, it wasn't until, say, like Western, medicine, you couldn't do autopsies. You couldn't open up a human body, that didn't happen until, say, after Descartes' thinking of mind and body separation was allowed. I mean, there's probably some subversives out trying to explore on their own, but in general, that wasn't possible because of that. You couldn't disrupt a body. You couldn't open it up and look at it. So, in Western medicine, they didn't really understand that clearly what was going on. Anyway, that's a digression. It's kind of interesting, but that sense of how we do tend to separate the material and spiritual, and that affects how we hold things. But certainly the recognition that when we pay attention to the breath, when we pay attention to modulating our breathing, we can create an affect in that sense of we breathe, really breathing in slowly, breathing out, so being a bit conscious with that, it has a settling effect. Sometimes, because another, sometimes like working with working with drowsiness, you sort of breathing in, sort of exaggerating the breathing a little bit, breathing in, breathing out. If you're in a group, you don't want to be too loud. You have to be sensitive to the people around you. But it has an effect. It energizes, right? Because there's a bit. You have to actually apply the mind to it. Whereas if you just kind of let the rhythm be kind of gentle and very rhythm, it'll help settle the mind as well. So that mind body are affecting each other. Also, as the mind itself gets more settled, then the breathing gets more refined. It gets slower. Sometimes, when the mind gets very, very still, the breaths are quite kind of faint and slow. Sometimes, I don't know, what's a regular breathing? About 12? 12, yeah. So that, sometimes if your mind's peaceful, maybe a breath every 1 or 2 minutes. That's not strange. But what's important is, because sometimes you say, I'm not breathing, what's happening? Mm-hmm. And you get worried. And then that agitates the mind. So that to be, okay, the breath is settling. It's not so, the actual sensation is a bit more subtle. That's where, how do I pay attention more clearly to the sensation that's there? How do I, and rather than the breath being the object, then the actual quality of knowing itself, turning attention back onto the knower, the awareness, the one who knows, it's all fair game. And it's something we have to learn and understand. So that using the, again, this sense of using the breath, working with the breath, when the Buddha gives his instruction on mindfulness of breathing, he begins with the attention to the body, and the very, very first instruction that the Buddha gives is this sense of setting mindfulness to the fore, putting mindfulness central to the process, and that sitting cross-legged, body erect, setting mindfulness to the fore, and then mindfully breathe in, mindfully breathe out. That's the kind of the basic instruction in terms of before he gets into the details. And it's helpful to pay attention to what the Buddha is saying, in the sense that he is saying, go to a quiet place. Especially when it's it's helpful to have the external environment supportive for meditation, which doesn't mean it's always going to be supportive or it's always going to be quiet when you meditate, but it's helpful to pay attention to those external environments, and then paying attention to one's posture, paying attention to that bringing mindfulness up in front of one, in that sense, raising up mindfulness so that it's there as one's breathing in, breathing out. And in doing that, then the Buddha goes in the ways that one pays attention to the body, breathing in long, discerning, I'm breathing in long, breathing in, out long, discerning, I'm breathing out long, breathing in short, discerning, I'm breathing in short, and then breathing out short, discerning, I'm breathing out short. So just paying attention to that rhythm of the breath, and the word that the Buddha uses as discerning, the verb is pajahanati, which is then is the verb that is turned into panya, usually translated as wisdom, but it has a much more active role than, because wisdom tends to be a bit of a, well, it's a noun, so it's fairly solid or not very active. Whereas discerning is I think, a much, much better, proper verb to that is applicable, so that discerning, attending to the breath coming in, breath going out, knowing clearly that there's the breath coming in long, in short, just that much is enough to get a good foundation of that acknowledgement and recognition of what the breath is doing. What am I? What's happening here? Okay, I'm connected with the breath, and it's not controlling it, or because it's not a say like in the yogic practices of pranayama, then you control the breath, and it's a different practice. This isn't observing, discerning, understanding, and that then the next again and these instructions I said, but to, the way that the Buddha set up the Mindfulness of Breathing Sutta, it's four foundations of mindfulness with four steps in each one, so that the breath, long breath, short, and then it's interesting, and all of the rest of the sutta, the Buddha changes the verb that he uses, so that rather than discerning, understanding, knowing, all of the rest of the, say, the verb, so the action that one is engaged in is training, sikkhati. So you're training yourself with the breath. And so he trains, excuse me, I will breathe in, sensitive to the entire body. Training oneself, I'll breathe out, sensitive to the entire body. And Bhikkhu Bodhi translates that as experiencing the entire body. The word in the scriptural language is patisangveti, and veti is the same root as vedana, feeling. So the feeling, and then both pati and sang are amplifiers, so that they're okay, feeling fully. So it's like, so feeling fully, so experiencing, or as this is Ajahn Jeff's translation, sensitive, because there's that quality of feeling as the root to the action that we're doing. So we're feeling fully, experiencing, sensitive to the entire body. And the word that's used is in the Pali, sabbagaya, which is sort of, gaya is just body, and sabba is sort of like all, entire, complete. So it's like a, so you get your whole body to work with, and so that sometimes just, you know, when one is breathing in, using that attention to sort of go through the body. I think there's the Mahasi Sayadaw technique, for those who practice within that. They'll use a way where you go through the, as you're breathing in, breathing out, and then you move awareness from the top of the head down through the body in different points. You know, and that's a skillful way of connecting with the body. And you're doing it in conjunction with the breath, and then connecting with the whole body, the entire body, and that's it's really, it's just really useful just to be able to ground one's awareness and attention in the body. I can remember years ago, I mean, there's many people like this, but Ajahn Sujito articulates it incredibly well, because he talks about himself. He said it was he just wasn't aware that there was anything sort of below his neck, and then I think it was summertime, and it was fairly warm out, which is a rare occasion in England, and they're doing some kind of work. And then he had this sort of strange sensation of actually having this sort of things in his arm. And of course, it was just muscle, but he hadn't actually experienced that before. It was very distant from his neck, which was so that sensitive to the entire body, experiencing the whole body, realizing that we're not just disembodied mind moments moving through space and somehow interacting with other beings that are similarly equipped somehow. using that foundation of the body, and it's an important anchor for awareness. And then training oneself, I'll breathe in, calming the bodily fabrication, body formation, trains the self, we'll breathe out, calming the bodily fabrication is how Ajahn Jeff translates body formation. The word in Pali is jitta sankhara, and are the body conditioners, body formations, body. And there is a couple suttas where the Buddha himself points to the breath as being the jitta sankhara, the gaya sankhara, the body conditioner. Because, and that's not, it's not a leap of logic, because if you breathe in and don't breathe out, the conditioning all of a sudden changes, and one's left with a lump of meat, But in terms of practice, then I think there's a lot of leeway where one can be both calming the physical body, but then also calming the breath, and this is where that sense of when one's calming the breath, one's actually calming the body. When one is attending to that breath as a bodily fabrication, a body conditioner, then it's conditioning the mind. But it's also giving a vehicle to start to bring awareness down a bit. Rather than it being too diffuse, too much movement through the, say, the physical sensations, when starting to hone that attention to something a bit more subtle, so then that where one's taking, and they call that the breath body. So that the physical sensation of the breath as it's coming in and going out of the body is called the breath body. Or the where one experiences it, if we just say if one just pays attention at the tip of the nose or at the abdomen, then the extent to which one feels that sensation is the breath body, and is the kaya sankara, the mind body formation, body condition, or body fabrication. So then you've got that gives you again a fairly large range of exploration and things to be working with in order to help to calm the mind, settle the mind, and generate a momentum of awareness and mindfulness as one is practicing, using the breath as it's coming in and going out. I could talk a long time about mindfulness of breathing, but I don't think it's useful. maybe open it up for questions and see what questions people have around mindfulness of breathing. And it'd be helpful to sort of keep it fairly, practice-oriented, so that it doesn't get too esoteric. Yeah?
Notice a connection between a person who is preparing for transition and going through agonal breathing. It is the same as is being suggested as one breath per minute or two.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
yeah.
relaxed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's preparing for that same sensation that we reach for while we're in the body.
Mm, yeah. Well, it's also definitely a release there. Yeah, and that's certainly as in terms of our own mind, to be able to give that conditioning, so that we can actually release our attachments, and we're doing that in meditation. We're really trying to give ourselves the optimum conditions where we can let go, because that's the whole purpose of this practice. How do we support ourselves in letting go, relinquishing our attachments? That's like what Ajahn Chah, remember him saying one time, you have to keep letting go until there is no remainder. of course you have to be alert, attentive, mindful, peaceful, clear, at ease. But that's the okay. How do we keep letting go till there's no remainder? Yeah, Anella.
Along the same lines, I think. I've had the experience on retreat of getting to very, very slow, shallow breathing to where I almost can't find my breath, and then starting to panic. And the instructions I've been given before, and what you said today was kind of a more positive what to do with it. The instruction I've received is don't gasp. Don't grab, because I've always the moment is gone.
Right.
But I heard you say, then just go to knowing?
Yeah.
Could you say a little more about the positive stuff?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, just because just seeing it as one is just sort of seeing it as natural, because that sense of when the mind is peaceful, the body's relaxed, Yeah, I don't need to breathe. I don't need to breathe so much. But then the nature of the mind, one is like fear, where because our being is associated with the breath, and if we're not breathing as we perceive as normal, then something's quite wrong, and so fear comes up. I'm being annihilated. I'm losing grasp of my being. But being able to see that as normal, and okay, when the mind is very peaceful, when the heart is very peaceful, then the body and the mind are at ease. Breathing is not so prominent, but then we need to have something for the mind to do. Because that's, as it starts to settle, then it's going to look for something else to do. And it gets up to its old tricks again of, either... And that's where sometimes imagery comes up in the mind because it's like, again, it's sort of, I'm being annihilated, give me something to distract myself with. And so that's where one has to kind of challenge the mind and say, what's going on underneath here? What's happening? What's the quality of knowing? What's this aspect of awareness? So that we start to investigate tap into the quality of knowing as a fundamental function of the mind, of the heart, of consciousness, and we start to be able to tune into that and see that, understand it more clearly, and then that the effect, of course, is one of inspiration or confidence.
Yeah. Oh, I think you might have answered my question.
Oh, okay.
I was coming at it from a different angle, where she was saying, after a long period of relaxing the breath, then she starts to panic.
Right.
I have a hard time breathing normally. Congestion, asthma.
Oh, right, right, right.
What. So I have a hard time even getting into that space to begin with.
Right.
I was wondering, how does one get past that fear, the initial fear, when I just can't breathe. How am I going to do this?
Right, right. Well, I think one of the things is that's where you use the body as, okay, how do I just relax? Because you're going to breathe anyway. somehow. But because breathing is associated with, the association is one of difficulty, then you have to come from the body side, like using attention. There's going to be a basic sort of rhythm, but then using that attention to go through the body, starting from the top of the head, and just relaxing. It's paying attention to where one starts to, starting from the forehead, around the eyes, around the jaw, around the throat, around the chest, around the shoulders, and the arms. So we're really, just as each in-breath and out-breath, moving attention slowly through the body and relaxing, softening, creating a sense of ease, and letting that go through the body. And then generally what would happen is the the breath itself would start to ease up a bit, because it's the relaxing that is there's a creating a sense of ease, creating a sense of relaxing, and then that will, as that is experienced in the body, then the breath will start to ease up, and then it can start to become something that you can be comfortable with rather than struggling with. Yeah, sure.
Could you give an example of how you would transition from, at what point during your meditation do you transition to that shift to knower or witness? How can you talk about that?
Well, that's something that it's experimenting. There's no formula for it, and it's but it's something that, and it isn't as if it's just like a, like it's one, it's really clear, and as if it's sort of like you're driving in your car and you change gears and then you're not going into reverse because you're going forward, sort of thing. It's much more that sense of, and I think that's where the investigation, when we talk about investigation in practice, it's more of a tuning in. And sort of seeing what's happening here, what's working, and as the awareness of the breath starts to become more clear, as there seems to be a sense of ease establishing itself, then it's like a question you raise up in the mind. Okay, what's the quality of knowing, what's happening here? What is the knower? And then sometimes that, you drop that in your mind, and your mind goes crazy. It just starts, proliferating thinking. So, no, that's not the right time, because it's not really it's not an intellectual question. Yes.
Find yourself there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but sometimes you actually have to prod the mind, because sometimes the mind just wants to be peaceful. It doesn't want to have to contemplate. It really doesn't want to have to figure too much out. I just want to be happy. which is fair enough, but it doesn't get you too far. So it's, sometimes you need to push the mind and to challenge it and say, okay, what's going on here? Am I just... Because also there's a very clear teaching in many circles of the, you make your mind peaceful, and then, when the mind is sufficiently peaceful and clear, then you direct it to the factors of insight. And of course, what happens is, the mind easily doubts and say, and it has desire, and I want to be peaceful and clear. So, and you say, I want to be more peaceful, more clear, And so that desire mind doesn't quite, there isn't really a point where it's ever going to feel, you know, really peaceful enough. That's the nature, because it's the nature of the mind. So you do have to prod it to a certain degree. Okay, what's going on? What are the factors of insight? What are the ways that I'm, where am I holding? And that's where Ajahn Chah's encouragement to, we have to learn how to let go until there is no remainder. And it works on all levels. And even with that peaceful mind, we don't want that peace disrupted too much. Yeah, it's hard. And it's hard to get there. And it's not that easy to make the mind peaceful. So we do need to encourage ourselves, push ourselves a little bit.
I have somebody and myself, like a long ago, when do meditations, certain stage, your body's kind of acting funny, sometimes like leaving one side, mm-hmm. and come back later to another side, sometimes mm-hmm. spinning. Mm-hmm. Like, what caused that kind of movement?
Well, there's lots of things. Sometimes. Yeah, sometimes people lots of things can be
it. Like, is it a good sign or bad sign?
Generally not such a good sign. Even though people will sometimes sort of swear that they're peaceful and clear the whole time.
Yeah, but most like sleeping for sure, like still awake, but like body's kind of like acting so funny.
Somebody can be, very peaceful and clear to a certain degree, but then there's this sort of expression, some of it is sometimes from. Old karma. Sort of karmic patterns that are playing itself out. But then one starts to feed them as well and create an identity with them. And so it can get complicated. And that's where it's important that's where contact with a teacher is really important. Because one can get stuck in patterns that are not so useful. And that's also where, using that mindfulness of breathing and using the pattern that the Buddha gives, where there's a tuning in to the whole body, tuning in to the calming the body, so that there's a real exploration of that, and it tends to be very settling and grounding, and rather than it being where one gets caught in. Because sometimes it can be a part of the mind being peaceful to a certain, beginning to become peaceful, and one of the factors of the mind that arises as the mind becomes more peaceful is piti, so a sense of rapture, and that can be expressed through the body, but then some people will feed that as well, so then it becomes important to their expression of it. So it gets complicated and twisted sometimes. so that it's necessary to really sort through those aspects, and then how to find, because like having a solid foundation of awareness. One of the things that's really, say, characteristic of the Buddha's teachings, all through the meditations, whatever meditative level, there's always awareness. And it's really important that when we're cultivating that, that there's always a fundamental awareness. If we lose that awareness, then we're starting to lose the plot, and have to come back and ground ourselves in that fundamental awareness of both mind and body. Yeah.
In the process of being aware and breathing, I, of course, and I assume everybody, have periodic spontaneous thought. Okay? And
yeah.
They aren't connected. It'll be a new topic. You know.
Yeah.
How far do I want them apart? Do I want to eliminate it?
Well, I mean, the thing is yeah, I mean, you have to recognize that the function of the mind is to think. I mean, that's its basic function. And so that thoughts arise, and we don't just see it as another impermanent thought formation arising and ceasing. It's me and my ideas and my, so we end up getting hooked by them. And so to be able to, you don't sort of try to hold the thoughts at bay, because that's a good way of really getting them going again. But you have to be attentive to the fact of, that's just a thought. And some of them might be useful, in order to follow up and reflect and investigate. Most are just going to be, you take, okay, that's just a thought, and just let it go. Just a thought, let it go. Come back to the breath. Because the more clear you are, the more you start to be able to see through the thought process. And it's not dismissing it, it's not trying to annihilate it, but it's sort of really seeing through it. And then there's a discernment there that allows one to have a context for it. And most often you'll just relinquish it. You'll probably learn something from it. But others where you think, oh, that's interesting, I'll follow through on it. And it might be very fruitful. It might be a very fruitful avenue of investigation. But it takes that clarity and, yeah, awareness and attention to be able to make that discernment. So that you have to train yourself in letting go of the thought processes in order to begin to gain some clarity as to what's useful and what's not useful.
But you're going to have them, huh? They're going
to... Oh, yeah.
I was trying to look and see where they... You ever watch the bottom of a pan of water boil? How the bubbles just come from nowhere?
Yeah.
That's where I got with it. It's like,
yeah.
They just come... Boom!
Yeah, well, that's what happens. It's just like that. That's what a mind does.
Yeah. Just boils up thoughts.
Yeah,
it seems like there's awareness, like about to have a thought, uh-huh. And you can almost decide almost not to let that thought.
Yeah.
And then you might know what the topic was.
Then you don't know if he was going to be interested.
doesn't feel like sitting there boiling. It's really
right. No, but there's just sort of, you know, sort of like popping up randomly.
Yeah.
My mind will fill with chatter. It's stuff I'm not interested in. What I've come to do is just say, okay, this is a chaotic mind.
I mean, that's again, that's where you go, okay. Because you've got the breath. And the breath comes in, the breath goes out. Sort of this random chatter, sort of. It's just sort of like, you know, you start being able, learning how to treat your mind like a small child. You know, they run around and they babble and talk you know, you don't take exception to them. You don't really worry about them. That's what children do. They run around. So long as there's nothing sharp around, it's okay. You don't have to worry about it. But you pay attention to the breath. And then that's what will settle that chatter.
I'm now able to follow the breath. And I stay following it. But then, the chatter starts going,
hey! Yeah, well, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. There is a certain element of it's just like that where it's like a dog that it really wants you to throw that stick. You know? Here's my stick. You know.
And then I just sort of peripherally watch the mind.
Kathy.
How do you not how do you keep the self from coming up if this is an interesting thought to follow?
How do you
if you have a thought and you say, okay, I'm gonna go with this because this might be useful, how do you keep the I'm going to do this and you know, buying into being the person doing this and having the I come up?
Oh, well, it's just being able to step back and recognize the conditioned nature of that whole process. Because right from the get-go, these are a series of conditions that are coming together, and you're paying attention to that condition process as opposed to a doer behind it. And that's where the investigative process of pulling apart, okay, this is body, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, sort of pulling things apart a bit. And seeing its conditioned nature, as opposed to there being an underlying me that is controlling. And main thing is really stepping back from the doer, because there is this compulsion that we have to be doing meditation, and exacerbates the sense of self, but the willingness to come back and rely on attention, awareness, knowing, which isn't investing itself in a identity, because even that knower, we can invest in that as well. Jonathan.
Sometimes it will be recollection, spontaneous recollection of Dhamma. Form recollection of Dhamma.
Yes.
But in the form of verbal, of thoughts, of sentences. And it doesn't get into stories into stories. It's just there.
Yeah.
And I've been wondering if it was skillful or if it was preferable just to let that go as well and just hold it.
I think when that's the case, the hiding factor is, does it facilitate, say, letting go, or does it facilitate a proliferation? So that's how you decide. If it's supporting a process of letting go, of relinquishing, of releasing, of dropping of attachment, then it's useful, it's beneficial. If it's starting to sort of spin or proliferate, or even if it's kind of intelligent, important thoughts, but you can start to feel the energy of that kind of proliferation, whereas the energy of letting go is more easeful and spacious. Okay, okay, one more question.
I have a question more about, I'm clear about thoughts, but where I get stuck is more with emotion and specifically moods.
Mm-hmm.
Mood is like this very subtle feeling, it's sort of like this muffled background noise. And you're sort of not really clear what it is, but it's unpleasant, so it's like this kind of feeling, but it's not like a thought, you can see it, let it go, but it's stickier.
Yeah.
So you like sit with it, so mm-hmm. Do you have any advice on how to work with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's really important, because the tone is, because that starts to generate. That's where the thoughts arise from, those tones. So it's like that's where using the body in terms of relaxing, because that's, it's like the mood of the mind is sort of, it has this, it might be something that is, you know, sticky or, you know, a bit negative or a bit confused. And if you start going to the mood, it's sort of like an octopus that wraps its tentacles around you, working with the breath and the body, then you're shifting the mood to one of consciously, in that sense, okay, consciously bringing up that feeling of kindness, or of ease, or of clarity, or of spaciousness, so that you're using the breath in conjunction with the body, and grounding the awareness in the body, where there's that sense of ease, or a sense of stability, or a sense of presence, or a sense of kindness, and then that helped that physical attention and that continuity of awareness will shift the mood itself. Okay, let's actually cross our legs and pay attention to the breath coming in, the breath going out. Bring up to the mind some of these themes. Just consider experiment with what may be useful.